Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namastubhyam Bhagavate. Purushaya Mahatmane. Vasudevaya Krishnaya.
Vasudevaya Krishnaya.
Sattvatam Pate Nama.
Sattvatam Pate Nama.
Namastubhyam Bhagavate.
Namastubhyam Bhagavate.
Purushaya Mahatmane.
Sarvatam Pate Nama. Nama. Obeisances. Tubhyam. Unto you. Bhagavate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purushaya. The Lord dwelling within the hearts of all. Mahatmane, the great soul. Vasudevaya, to him who dwells everywhere. Krishnaya, Sri Krishna, Satvatam of the Yadu dynasty. Pataye, to the master. Nama, obeisances. Translation. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Great Soul, who are all-pervading and who reside in the heart of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Please repeat. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Great Soul, who are all-pervading, and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. So what I'll do is I'll read the verses prior to this in these prayers so we can get a feel of, again, of how the Indra's prayers are progressing. So first, in the fourth text, Indra's first prayer, he says to Krishna, because remember that Krishna is standing before him, and it's quite astounding, because Indra is so powerful. He has such tangible power, and it's expressed and manifest through everything he does. He descends on his great carrier, he controls the rain, the clouds, even the clouds of destruction are under him. And he's the king of heaven. He sits upon a golden throne. And so many persons come to him and offer obeisances. And he has apsaras, dancing girls. And he's a king of heaven. And there is this little boy, just so young, so delicate, so beautiful, with a bluish complexion and a peacock feather upon his head, standing before him at the foot, at the base of Govanan Hill. He's a cowherd boy with a peacock feather upon his head, decorated with vanamala. What does vanamala mean? A garland of forest flowers, with his flute tucked into his belt and buffalo horn robe. Just a cowherd boy. But he's gotten a glimpse. Indra has gotten a glimpse of Krishna's power. And that glimpse, that seeing, the small amount, or his fathoming or understanding a small amount of Krishna's power, has placed him in a position of awe and reverence and fear. Because awe and reverence means fear, because one is afraid that one is doing something wrong. And indeed, Indra has done something terrible, because he was so upset and angry that he had been affronted by Krishna stopping the Indra Jagya, the sacrifice to him. He's become very angry and he sought revenge, and he's done something horrible, an attempt to kill those who Krishna considers most dear. And then he's seen Krishna lift Govardhan Hill and completely stop his plan, holding it up as easily as a child holds up
a mushroom.
No, because mushrooms don't have any mass. They're not heavy at all. And Krishna held that up and gave shelter. And despite Indra displaying all his power, he saw, compared to Krishna, my power is insignificant. Insignificant. He, like Brahma, could not grasp, he could not understand the extent of Krishna's power. He could not understand how powerful Krishna was, but he understood, however powerful Krishna is, and he displayed just a small amount of his power, my power, insignificant, nothing. Like if you took a marigold and threw it against an elephant with all your might, the elephant wouldn't even bother looking at you. So that's how Indra felt. So his first prayer, acknowledging Krishna's transcendental position, was, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. So despite your acting as if you were a young boy, your form is completely transcendental. So since you have a form that's sarvam vishuddham, pure, spiritual, since that is true, how then, this is the second verse, text 5, how then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which actually exist in me, which I was thinking existed in you, thinking, oh, that this Krishna is so proud and so greedy, he's stopping the Indra sacrifice. But actually, what I was seeing was my own consciousness. So these qualities don't exist in you, but indeed, it has been proven that they exist in me. Greed, lust, anger, but you are transcendental, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence. And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. So there must be a different motivation in everything you do, because you are not motivated by the same things that motivate me and everyone else in the world. You're existing above the modes. You are existing above passion and ignorance, above even goodness. You are sattvam vishuddham, vasudeva sabditam. So you act. Pritranaya sadunam vinasya chatuskritam. Protect religious principles, yada yada hidamasya glanir bhavati bharata, and to curb down the wicked. But what is motivating you is completely different from that which is motivating me and everyone else in this world. You are the Father, and you are the spiritual master of this entire universe, and also its supreme controller. And there Krishna is at the base of Govardhan Hill, the coward boy, decorated with the minerals. The coward boys used to decorate Krishna's face with the minerals from Vrindavan. You are insurmountable time, imposing punishment on the sinful for their own benefit. not in retribution, not in revenge, because you have acted improperly against my commands. I shall show you what happens to those who don't listen to me. No, not like that. Practically speaking, like the punishment that is given to the prisoners has two reasons behind it. One of them is that society sees that those who act against the best for society, they have to be punished. One cannot do this. And the second is for the rectification, the changing of the heart of those who choose to go against the law. So we have our plans continuously, how I'm going to enjoy and how I'm going to be happy, independently of Krishna, and the laws of material nature continuously show us again and again that our plans will not work. We suffer, because that is the definition of sin, going against the will of Krishna. And this is our existence, is sinful because of that, our very existence, because we have turned our back on Krishna. Nadi bahimukh, and therefore ata eva tari samsareda duk. We experience the miseries of repeated birth and death. So for our benefit, like we're like foolish children, like there's a fan going around and the child wants to touch it, so he touches boom, and then he may touch it again, boom, touch it again. Or did anyone ever get an electric shock? Yeah, it's very, very, it's heavy. And if you see the kind of thing that shocks you, you just, when you get even near it, oh, you have that experience? Yes? One time, yeah, anyway, I won't tell you about all my shocking experiences in life. But so that's the purpose of the punishments, so that we inflict it upon us by the material nature, so that we recoil from doing those kind of things again for our own benefit. But we really ultimately must get to the ultimate cause of the shocking experience, is being in the material world is the shocking experience. From beginning to end, the first shock is the birth, and the first thing the child does is cry. It's just a shock. And so much so that if the child's not crying, they think something's wrong, so they have to hit the child on the head, on the back, to make the child cry, to get the air into the lungs, because this is what our experience is. First thing, we come into this material world, and then the last thing we do in the material world before death is experience the terror of that. So the whole thing from beginning to end is shocking and terrifying. So we have to learn the lesson that this is not our home, despite the fact that we wish so determinedly to enjoy here. We have no shelter here, in fact. So you are the supreme controller. Your insurmountable time imposing punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Indeed, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, you act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves master of this world. And of course, everyone is thinking like that. That's the essence of the demonic mentality. And Krishna's incarnations, if one is big in that, a big asura, this is called asura bhav, the mood of someone with a demonic mentality. So the big asuras, the like Hiranyakashipu, Krishna comes to personally to annihilate them on one level. The other level, of course, he comes to protect his devotee. That's the real point, that out of love for his devotee comes. So it's a false pride becomes removed, and the false pride is manifesting and thinking that we have the capacity to be a lord in this world, when in fact attempting to be a lord and enjoyer and controller simply causes us anxiety because the universe refuses to cooperate. And the actual fact is what gives us pleasure is service, loving service. And Krishna comes to do both, to remove the pride and give and to display to those, to everyone, that the true object of their loving service is Him. So Indra is moving towards his own position because he, even though not a demon, had this false pride. And it manifested as, how dare Krishna stop the sacrifice to me? Doesn't he understand who I am? I will show him and all those foolish residents of Vrindavan who listen to him. I will teach them a very important lesson that they will, so that they will never make this foolish mistake again. I will show them who I am and what my power is. This is the way we think all day long. Not always, but... So then he's moving to his own position. He says, even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see, what? That you are fearless even in the face of time. Karosmin lokachaya krit. Time means destruction for all living entities who identify with the material world and were attached to anything in the material world, their situation is ruined. So but Krishna, of course, having a transcendental body, not and being the master of time, he is not touched by this and he's fearless. Time manifests as the black snake of death for everyone. Indeed, when Dhritarashtra left the palace in Hastinapur, and when Yudhisthira was lamenting, who took him away? Who took Dhritarashtra away? Vidura. He wanted to save him. And Yudhisthira was lamenting, oh, I could not protect my beloved and revered uncle. I could not protect him. He has run away. I did not treat him properly. He has left me. Who will protect him? He's blind. And Narada Muni replied that how can one who himself is within the grip of the powerful serpent of time protect another who's also from time? He himself is being the agajara. What does agajara mean?
Python.
So we're being gripped by a python and it's squeezing the life out of us, and we see someone who's in a dangerous position, we think, I'm going to save him. What? How can we save anyone when we ourselves are in the grip of the python of time? So even fools like me who proudly think themselves universal lords quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see that you are fearless even in the face of time. Krishna is beyond time. Everything in the material world is controlled by goodness, passion, and ignorance, the three modes of material nature. And these three modes of material nature are impelled by time. It moves them. The three modes, including the thing, everything in the material world is a product of the three modes of material nature. If a mind, which is, comes from which mode? I'm not asking you about where your mind is, comes from. Where does the mind come from? It comes from goodness. Goodness interacting with false ego produces the mind. Intelligence is produced from the mode of passion. And all the ingredients the subtle and gross other ingredients of the material world are produced from the combination of false ego and the mode of ignorance. So all these things, these are like the ingredients of the material world, in like the big pot of the universal creation, and time is what stirs them and moves them all around. It's like the big stirring spoon or something that moves around all the ingredients, which ultimately are under the modes of material nature. And Krishna is above that completely. He is the Lord of time. I am time, he says. That form of time is me, Kalosmin. That destructive form of time is my potency, the potency of the Paramatma, of the Supersoul. So you are fearless even in the face of time, so therefore I can take shelter of you and thereby lose my fear. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them for their benefit. Same concept again. Engrossed in pride over my ruling power, which happens, this is the tendency. As soon as we're able to do anything, we can be insulted and fail 100 times in a day, and then on the 101st time we tried to do something, we succeed a little bit, and then we become proud. This is the nature, the very nature of the false ego in the material world. It is so resilient. Our foolishness is resilient. So Indra had something that he had such great expertise in and such potency, but in Kali Yuga, even a pauper is proud of his penny, it is said. So ignorant, so proud, engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you, O Lord. You may forgive me. Please, may you forgive me. Please forgive me for the actions that I committed under the influence of the mode of nature, modes of nature, pride. This is illusion. This is, in one sense, the first illusion, thinking, of course, it comes after envy. We don't want Krishna to be the supreme, but we want to be the center. So that's our pride and our illusion. So, engrossed in pride over my ruling power. So when we hate to do things bad and we hate to fail. But in one sense, failure is the pillar of success, and the more dangerous is the success, because out of failure what can easily be born is humility, and out of success what is generally born is pride. And pride, when one gets proud, what it means is that we must fall. Pride goeth before the fall. We must come down to earth, to reality. We come like balloons that are filled up with what? Hot air, or sometimes even helium, which makes us take off and think we're wonderful. And then pop! And then all the bigness that we have, there's nothing actually there. So that's what we see by Krishna's mercy. If we have some spiritual vision, we can see that. And then if we're very fortunate, we know what to do. Because this we can be sure of, that Krishna will give us every day so many opportunities. Pride will come to us, and failure will come to us, and humility will come to us during the day. This is just the way the material nature works. So if we know how to deal with these things, either it's pride or failure that comes to us, we are very fortunate. This is the art of Krishna consciousness, and Indra is going to teach us this. So I offended you, O Lord, may you forgive me. So first pride came, and then by Krishna's mercy, then his failure came, and then humility came, and then he's asking for forgiveness. My intelligence was bewildered. I lost intelligence, offers perspective on reality.
That's what intelligence does. It allows us to see reality more. When our mind is focused on something, we lose all our perspective on everything. We think that's everything. When the mind accepts sankalpa, when the mind accepts that, sankalpa vikalpa, sankalpa, when it accepts something, that becomes everything from us, and the intelligence is lost. Jayato visaya pungsan sangas teso pajayate, and then intelligence becomes lost by this. It means we don't see anything in perspective. So my intelligence was bewildered. I thought I was actually powerful. But let my consciousness never again be so impure. You descend. So he's saying, I don't want this to happen to me again. I always make the same mistake again, again, and again, and again. I find out 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times that I'm insignificant. And then again, I do something, I sweep the floor properly. And I think, oh, how wonderful. No one can sweep the floor as well as I do. Look at how I'm washing pots. I bet everyone is envious of me. What to speak of doing something of more significance. So this is the nature of false ego. This is the nature of maya, illusion. This is the nature of being in the material world. This is what maya does to us. It makes us forget who we are. It takes away our perspective on reality. So you descend into this world, O transcendent Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. So you've come, yada yada hidamasya glaniya bhavati bharata bhutanam dhamasya tadatmanam shajamyaham pritranaya sadhanam vinasaya chitaskutam dhamasam stapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. So Krishna has this dual purpose of coming to the world to chastise the miscreants, those who are giving trouble to the peace of the world, and also to protect the devotees. Simultaneously, he acts for the welfare of those who faithfully serve his lotus feet. And then, coming to almost the conclusion of this, of glorifying Krishna in this verse, he says he offers his obeisances to Krishna. This means he's surrendering to Krishna. He's giving himself to Krishna. No longer do I want to think of myself as the center. It has caused me pain in this life for hundreds of lives. I want to become a servant, your servant. So obeisances unto you. Why? Because you are Bhagavan, Bhagavate, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is who you are. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chetragya Katatatra, and I am your energy. I am your part and parcel. I am an individual, but yet, like the sun rays are part of the sun, I am your part and parcel, fragmental, tiny, insignificant, but yet qualitatively the same with you, but quantitatively, oh, so small. And I need a shelter, like the spark of a fire needs a shelter. It needs to be in the fire, close to the fire. Otherwise, what happens to that spark? It what? Disappears practically. It loses its fiery nature. So our spiritual nature is lost unless we are in contact with Krishna and we become in contact with the cold material energy. Lifeless material energy, we also become lifeless, even though we are sparks of Krishna. So obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great soul. You are the great Mahatmane. You are the great, great soul, and everything is included within you. Pumsaya, Purushaya, you are the Purusha. There are three Purusha avatars. There are three super souls. The first is the super soul, the soul of all existence, Mahavishnu, Karanadaksha Vishnu. Then there's the Gobadaksha Vishnu, the super soul of the universe. The Mahavishnu gives life to the entirety of material existence. And Gobadaksha Vishnu, expansion of Mahavishnu, gives life to the universe. And Kiradaksha Vishnu, the super soul within everyone's heart, who is referring to here, he gives life to every individual. Otherwise, practically, even though we are souls, we have no life. He gives us that. So you are Purushaya, the Lord dwelling in the hearts of all. You are the great soul. It is not me who is the great soul. I'm an insignificant soul. It is you. Vasudevaya, you are everywhere. You are all pervading. These are your qualifications for accepting my worship. I want everyone to think of how great I am and worship me being so wonderful, but I have none of these qualities. Krishnaya, you are Sri Krishna, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satvatam, who is the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Pattaya, to you, my master. Nama, I offer my respectful, humble obeisances and surrender unto him. Any questions at this point? Because he is powerful and we are insignificant. We should surrender. The envious mentality thinks he may be powerful and I may be insignificant. Why should I surrender? What does that have to do with me surrendering? Okay, he's powerful. It's okay. Why should I surrender? And the answer is because it's natural. We need shelter. And we always end up surrendering to people more powerful than us anyway. We go to work, the boss takes out his whip, makes us work all day long, gives us some money, he makes 100 times as much as us. We have to surrender to him, he buys us while we're in there. We have to surrender. We surrender to the country, the family, the this, the that, the boss. We're tiny. It's our nature to surrender. To our senses, obey your thirst, obey your hunger, obey your mind. We surrender to our minds. We cannot avoid surrendering, so why not surrender to he who is the natural object of surrender, because he's all powerful. He is the great soul. He is the Purushaya within everyone's heart. He is Vasudeva. He is all pervading. He is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, some questions, Dr. Martini?
Can you give us some practical tips on how we can avoid that kind of pride arising?
I'll suggest a few and then others can suggest other tips. One is keep on being foolish and being proud and suffer. Touch the fan enough times and you'll just hate, fear, be terrified the thought of it. When that mood comes in our consciousness, when we feel ourselves ascending in size, our head expanding like a big balloon, it comes a feeling of self-significance. And when it starts, you say, no, no, I don't want it, because what happens is, and then pop, I don't want them. Pop means sinful. So we don't want it. So we can. That's one way. Just, okay, keep getting proud until it becomes the last thing we want. Keep trying to be the enjoyer until there's so much misery attached to it. It's the last thing we want. Yes. but we want to be more intelligent than that. That was the indirect way of saying, don't do that. Don't do that. Why have to go through that in suffering? Intelligence is business. Is to see the future, see around the corner. So don't do that. Don't do that. Not provide a circumstance, as that fellow did. Provide a circumstance and a whole facility for people to do that. Rather, just a way to say, don't, why are we so foolish and do that? Hate the, when that feeling starts arising, recognize it. Be introspective and conscious enough to recognize that experience of pride and stop it quickly. Another thing is to be in contact with the great all the time. And that's the ultimate way. There's the negative, I don't want this, and then the positive. And practically speaking, this is the only way, is to keep ourselves always in contact with our Master and always consider oneself a servant of our Master. Our Masters. And third, so that means always chant. Always chant. The material energy will not touch us if we constantly chant. And if we keep ourselves always in the mood of a servant of Krishna, of Krishna's devotees, of our spiritual master, then what we do it in the mood of a servant. And the third suggestion is to acknowledge our tendency to get proud, feel ourselves not strong enough to always keep ourselves chanting and as a servant, and be very, very, very meek and humble and praying for protection. So those are three suggestions. Anyone want to add any more? Okay, then any other questions?
Throughout the day, like our mind tells us many things, and most of the things are usually turned out to be wrong. And at the time, we know that intelligence is superior to our mind, and even superior to intelligence is false ego, isn't it?
Superior in what sense?
Superior in the sense that it controls the senses. Like intelligence controls the mind, and false ego controls the intelligence.
Okay. Yes.
So then we throughout the day, our mind tells us many things, and usually it turns out to be wrong. And at the time, we seem to lose our intelligence. And is it because of false identification with the matter?
Exactly.
False ego, that's
yes. Exactly. Because this is the way it should work. First of all, the intelligence is the next door neighbor to the super soul, and the way to purify the intelligence is through shastra. False ego wants to place itself in the center. Shastra wants to place Krishna in the center. So the way to cure the problem of the false ego controlling the intelligence, and then the intelligence making in the mode of passion, scheming to satisfy the mind's desire to want everything, to please the senses, is shastra. Because if the intelligence judges right and wrong and what should be done and what should not be done by shastra, then the result is that it will control the mind and control the senses. So therein lies the key. If we hear shastra, it purifies and gives strength to the intelligence and direction to the intelligence. And it gives it the proper direction. And if we don't hear shastra, the intelligence will turn into a very firm servant, very dedicated and loyal servant of the false ego, not knowing what's truly in its benefit. And for that reason, intelligence is born of the motive passion, because the tendency for materialistic intelligence is scheming and plan making for the satisfaction of the false ego. For that reason, it's born of the motive passion. Is that clear? So if we don't hear Shastra, we will be lost. And therefore Srila Prabhupada spent so much of his time and energy on translating, printing, publishing, distributing transcendental knowledge. Because of this reason, it's knowledge, it gives illumination. False ego means darkness, ignorance, illusion. Illusion because the first illusion is that we want to be the Lord of material nature. And if you just think about it, just Lord means controller. If you just think about it for 1 second, what is the chance that you have to be the controller of material nature? What are the odds that you're going to be able to succeed and control material nature? So to think that I can do this, to place the universe in my control to the degree that things will happen that I want and things that I don't want to happen won't happen, what are your chances? So how much illusion you have to be, one has to be in to think of oneself as the controller. And then what someone might say, I don't want to be a big controller of the universe. I just want my little cubicle, my little cubbyhole. And if I have that, and I can make my, what is that saying? You cut your coat according to your pocket, something like that. Suited. No, it's your pocket, meaning according to your capacity, how much you can afford. So I can't afford to be the controller of the universe, but I can at least make my little cubicle. But we can't even do that. If we think of it as our house or a plot of land, that doesn't even work. And even if we're able to control that to some degree, then the real cubicle that we're in is the body, and that goes out of control completely, ultimately. What to speak of the mind, which is the covering within the body even. Those whose desire is to control them, their minds, practically speaking, are out of control. And then what happens? Because then what happens? I have my little house with my little car and my little nice garden around it and lawn and everything like that, and I'm walking my little dog, and my family, they respect me or something like that. And then I see someone who has a nicer house, a nicer car, a more beautiful wife, more beautiful dog, or his dog eats my dog, and suddenly I'm envious. And envy is compared to like a spear in the heart. How can you be happy with a spear in the heart? So that's what it's like in the material world. And whoever thinks that my little cubicle is enough, it's insufficient. We grow out of it. We want more, and that's called greed. Because the mind is lusty, it wants, it desires. Greedy, and then becomes angry because you want something, you want to control something, and it doesn't happen. And material nature simply refuses to cooperate with our plan, even if it is cut according to our capacity, what we think our capacity is, even if we've
downsized it. The material nature of the universe simply refuses to cooperate. Because we're out of water, we're out of the water of our true existence, we're servants of Krishna. When we're in that consciousness, amazing as it sounds, is the material nature is fully cooperative. What do you think about that? Because all the misery that it will give us, Krishna, 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 and all the happiness it will give us, oh Krishna, I don't deserve this. Please protect me from becoming entangled in this. So everything will just bring one closer to Krishna if one has devotion. And when one is able to do that, tatena kampamsu simikshana mano bunjane vatmagripa vabakamrit bhagva vapodam vandana namaste jivate o mukti pade sadayabhag. One is then, when one lets the universe, which is under Krishna's control, push him and pull him to Krishna's lotus feet and surrenders to that, he's in the kingdom of God already, practically, as devotion. And when one is able to do that, tatena kampamsu simikshana mano bunjane vatmagripa vabakamrit bhagva vapodam vandana namaste jivate o mukti pade sadayabhag. One is then, when one lets the universe, which is under Krishna's control, push him and pull him to Krishna's lotus feet and surrenders to that, he's in the kingdom of God already, practically speaking, because he's no longer fighting Krishna. So these are the aspirations of the devotee. He's no longer fighting with Krishna, he's fighting for Krishna. Because it's a struggle. We can't avoid a struggle in this world. We're in a foreign atmosphere. There was once a book that I never read, but the title is so intriguing. It's called Stranger in a Strange Land. And when you like when the devotees who came from India, when you first arrive for the first time, and you know, and if you don't know anyone, it's everything is different. You know, there's no people anywhere. If you've come to Australia, you know, or something, and you know, you feel like a stranger in a strange land. And the Western devotees, when they come to India for the first time, they go through, and suddenly, you know, you're accosted by 700 people who are asking you if you want a taxi to Vrindavan or something like that. Let me carry your bags. But first you have to tell me where you're going to carry them. I will give you best price, only 100 times more than I'm charging everyone else. Don't worry. So it's terrifying, it's frightening. Being a stranger in a strange land, because you don't know what's going to happen next. That's the material world. We're strangers in a very strange land. And by the time, you know, as we grow up, we learn to deal with this. We learn to make our friends, and we learn to make our little places that are not strange to us. And then we gather around us the illusion of security, and we rely on our strengths, whether it's our intelligence, our beauty, our talents, our cleverness, our being able to cheat better than everyone else, our physical strength, our money. We learn to rely on these. We learn to take shelter of them. And this is illusion, because the universe, again, it simply refuses to
cooperate with this, with the illusion that these things are a true shelter. They all prove false, and therefore everyone's always in anxiety because we're taking shelter of things that are in fact not capable of giving us shelter. Like the rabbit, when Chase closes his eyes, or the emus put their head in the sand too, or is that just ostriches? Emus can't find the hole. They can't figure that out. And then, just imagine the terror that enters the heart of the rabbit when the dog is chasing him and he's taking shelter of closing his eyes, which are not a worthy shelter. And just imagine, so right, the dog is here, the rabbit is here with his eyes closed, and he's feeling secure, and the dog is here, and he's feeling secure, and then the dog is here and he's feeling secure, and the dog is here and he's still feeling secure. But just imagine the terror that enters his heart when reality hits, and the teeth and the claws rip apart the illusion. That is the material world. We don't want to take shelter of false shelters, because false shelters are in fact no shelter at all. So Indra is saying, here is the real shelter. Here is the shelter. There's no question of real shelter and false shelter, in the sense that a false shelter simply isn't a shelter. Here is shelter. Even of me, who thought myself so powerful, but when confronted with reality, in illusion — illusion means boxing off. Illusion means you take a part of reality and accept it as the whole. That's illusion. It's true, but it's not absolutely true or fully true. It's partially true. In my house, I've kept my room clean. You know, I've made this right. So therefore, my house is right, but it isn't. Some partial truth accepted as the whole truth is illusion. So the art of Krishna consciousness is just simply moving towards that shelter, and then to our actual shelter. And then when we actually gain the shelter of Krishna, then our devotional life begins in a way of a different level and a different flavor, when we gain the shelter of Krishna's internal energy. And that is called bhava bhakti. And then we are sadhakas also. Practitioners, practices, but then the practice is something different. Then it's the practice is to develop prema. And that's what will satisfy us, prema bhakti. Everything else is the happiness of the material world, which is false promise. And anticipation is the happiness. When this happens, then I'll be happy. So that's our happiness now. Anticipating another situation will make us happy. That's the happiness of the material. When I get the house, when I get the camera, when I get to this, when I have more money, when I return to here, when I go there, then, anticipating. Like the donkey or the horse who has the carrot suspended in front of his nose. When I catch the carrot, then I'll be satisfied. So what it takes is, you know, some very, very deep honesty to examine our minds and consciousness and come to grips with our own self-imposed dreams and fantasies of illusion. It's very difficult to do this. So much easier to point out the illusions and faults in another. You know, the fantasies of happiness that we carry around with us that no one else knows about because they're living just in our mind. Mm-hmm. the only if, and when this happens, you know, this is what keeps us going in the material world. But it takes, we should understand, we don't really want these things because they won't give us what we're looking for. What we're looking for really is, we're looking towards them. And this, you know, if we turn our, you know, if we can just think, you know, if you take a moment and just think of, you know, if we could just put ourselves in illusion for a moment, but not too much, but enough to remember, you know, what we usually think, what the mind is going on and what's an anxiety about during the day, and, you know, just how, what it's like. And then just quickly look at Radha Ballava, and there's such a relief to the consciousness to get that shelter, even because it's darkness and light, because they're so beautiful. And it's, you could take some dolls and, you know, dress them. There's so many dolls dressed up in the Maya store, which is absolutely properly named, improperly spelled but properly named. You know, there are so many dolls who are dressed up in an attractive way to allure us and everything like that, but there's no happiness that comes from seeing dolls as the happiness that comes from seeing Radha Ballava. You know, the heart becomes pulled. You know, when we see the dolls and the dressed up dolls, the mind becomes agitated. You know, the mind maybe become even somewhat attracted. I want. But the heart doesn't become touched. The consciousness doesn't become touched in the same way. It's something completely different from a different level. And the material world, you know, the consumer shop orientation of current civilization, that, you know, that whole economic consume is just this one thing of filling us with the anticipation, making, arousing our envy and our greed and our lust, so that we anticipate and think, only when I get this I'll be happy. So who is really sincere and brave enough to just cut it, say no, and refuse to listen, just simply refuse to listen to the mind's tricks when it's attached, when it becomes, attaches itself to these material plans, and to recognize it when the mind does this its 1,000 times in a day? Who is that sincere that can say, no, I don't want this? Or who is so sincere to say, I do want this on a certain level, but oh Krishna, I'm so weak, you please help me, I don't want this. Please give me the shelter of your lotus feet. That takes full sincerity. And Krishna reciprocates with that. Then if we understand our precarious position in the material world and meditate and take shelter of Krishna in that way, then he will help us unlimitedly. But not unlimitedly like, I've taken shelter of you, Krishna, and here's all my list of all the things I wanted. Now I've taken shelter of you. That's not how we want to help. We want him to burn the list and allow us and accept us, allow us to serve him and accept him, accept us as his servant. It's actually very, very, once again, very difficult, very easy to understand, hard to practice, but Krishna will help if we make our attempts. Hearing does it. You stay in your place externally, okay. But internally, don't stay in your place. Become completely absorbed through the process of hearing
constant attempt at devotion and devotional service wherever we are. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah.
Sometimes it occurs that a person has manifested this pain so strongly, or it is already so strongly supportive of the wrong things, that when you say to them, stand your place, I always think about Krishna, those two things seem to be like totally incompatible.
But when there's a true incompatibility, one should change one's circumstance. But don't make point being, but it'll be based on something deep and internal in that way. And we should also know that, we should also think, I'm staying in my place, there's something incompatible, or even there's something compatible, but I'm not going forward. Perhaps we should think, how close is the dog? Here I am, very securely in my nice place. The place has to be developing is the place of surrender and devotion. So, and also it's not even an expert doctor doesn't prescribe for himself. So, especially the older we get, the less we want to. The more hardened we become in our whatever position it is. So therefore, one conclusion. But yet the dog is getting closer to devouring us and ripping us apart. So there has to be that sense of urgency. And therefore, Vidura was needed to pull Dhritarashtra out. And the other way to understand that is that the younger we are, we should be more and more serious to get a very firm foundation. Because if we get this when we're young, we'll always, even if we try to enjoy the material, we'll be fighting against this deep impression of youth, just like some of the older devotees trying to become Krishna conscious have to fight against the deep impressions of their youth that are materialistic. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Share on this. Yes?
Once in the class, takes a false ego to break through false ego or something.
Wasn't takes it? False ego to break through false
takes
ego?
Takes a lot of false ego to break through false ego.
What did I mean by that? Did I really say that?
last time you came, so.
Yeah. I can't figure out what in the world I would have meant.
Similar to what you were saying before about pride. The more you get proud, the more you don't want it.
Oh, maybe, yeah, maybe, but it doesn't sound like something I usually say, that one. but it's not false ego or pride or suffering that gives birth to bhakti. It's the hearing about Krishna, and then the material energy will do the rest, in one sense, to break those things. But it's not that suffering in any way can give birth to bhakti. Because there are hundreds of millions and millions and millions of people who suffer but don't become devotionally inclined. The seed has to be there and watered for something to come. Like Gajendra, he found himself in a suffering position, but because of his devotion from previous lives, he took shelter of Krishna. You just imagine what it was like to be your leg in the grip of a crocodile. Just that crocodile with their sharp teeth, just imagine. Just pulling, that's what it's like in the material world. And we're in the crocodile's territory and it's trying to put us under. And you know, we strongly and bravely go forward, but we're in the grip of the crocodile, we can't get out. And we may be able to resist for some time. Our body may be able to resist the disintegration that the material energy is enforcing through the crocodile of time. But it's going to win. Unless we learn the art of getting out.
Yes. In the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj discusses the three deities in Vrindavan, the Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas worship. One to establish the relationship, one to serve, and then
the practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then finally the goal.
So what are those stages? What stages in devotional service do that level of worship relate to?
Madana Mohan, the spiritual master is called Madana Mohan Vigraha. He's the one who formally establishes the relationship with Krishna, the Sambandhagyan. And then once that is established, then Govindadev engages us in sadhana, the practical abhideya tattva of sadhana bhakti, which means all different, as you said, all kinds of services. And Gopinath, that's the prayojan. He is the one who attracts us. He attracts us to the higher realms of service. That's all I could say about that at this point. Did you mean something more specific?
So the Vaishnavas strictly follow this, the worship of those deities. But I'm just wondering, in our situation, we're worshipping Radha Bhagava. So how do we know at what stage we're at, and how does that manifest in the service of the deity that we might be worshipping?
But if you took away that statement of Prabhupada's, would you understand the answer to that question? The statement that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas strictly follow that. Would you understand how to perform Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana just here with Gaurana Tairata Balav and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra?
I think you could.
It would be quite simple. It's quite practical because all the books discuss that. Mm-hmm. So that statement is meant in a particular context. Mm-hmm. So, and also, Radha Balava manifests as Gopinath, he manifests as Govinda,
as
Madana Mohan.
Confirm.
Yeah.
It's basically the practice that we follow in everyday devotional life.
But not in the everyday devotional life that I follow, but the way everyday devotional life that someone who is deeply, deeply sincere and fixed follows. Their mind is on Sambandha. I am Krishna's servant. What is the process of my serving to get to the goal of Prayojana? And the goal of Prayojana is fixed in their consciousness also. Nothing in Krishna consciousness, it's not mechanical nor superficial, it's deep. Neither mechanical nor superficial. And even the hearing that is so much recommended in chanting, it's not mechanical. It depends more on mercy than on the mechanical. Prabhupada is explaining. It depends more on the mercy, the reciprocation. It's personal. If you love me, I will love you, Prabhupada told Sadhguru Maharaj. If we serve Radha Balava with devotion, they'll take care of us in that way. Not that it's business, but it's just natural to reciprocate with love and bhakti, and that's what Krishna consciousness is based on. It is based on devotion and Krishna's reciprocation of mercy with the heartfelt offering, the heartfelt chanting, the sincere hearing, and offerings made. The Abhideya process is Kevala Bhakti, Akinchana Bhakti, pure devotional service. Anyabhilasita Sanyam Gyana Kamana Vita Anakulena Krishna Anashilanam Bhakti Uttamam. The Abhideya Tattva that brings us to the Prayojana is that. It's not even mixed bhakti, it's that bhakti.
You talked about it's not mechanical, it's mercy. Mechanical seems to mean that if I do this, I'm going to get this kind of result. So
automatically. Mechanical means automatically. You put your $1 in the slot of the
machine. What do you get for a dollar if you put it in the machine? Change only. Nothing.
So is there anything that we do that attracts mercy, or that
yes.
Mechanical?
Yes, you have a mood of devotion when you do it. That's what attracts the mercy. Oh, Krishna, be pleased by this. I'm doing this for your pleasure. Something of the consciousness of the affection of the devotee.
What are
then the path is then preach to others about what the right thing that they should do, and then you have to listen. Because there's special mercy. When you feel, if you feel you need special mercy, preach. In Kali Yuga, we're so disqualified. We need special mercy. So preaching, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Srila Prabhupada, preach. It will do the best thing for you and the best thing for others. And indeed, it was the best thing for others. We can't comment on any more than that, really. But that's preaching. Best thing for us and the best thing for others. Because Krishna is pleased to use a devotee in that way. And it is so austere and difficult to preach in this age. Because the whole material energy is working against you. So therefore, who will take, just like the Father is just so pleased and so grateful to a son who tries to help other sons who are in difficulty. The Father is just so grateful. So some special kindness will come to him. Same principle. Okay, now it's... You might have a good time to let you drop that. Namittakaram bhavasavya satyam. Let Krishna be your spirit.